Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball like we do every Saturday morning. Today, still wondering, what are the Cubs going to be? And maybe wondering how the White Sox will invent a new way to lose a game. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. Yeah, here we are followed up by a no fun Friday again, where both teams lose. And, you know, you don't want to start on negative street, but there's not a lot of places to go other than negative town right now. There's not great stuff going on at Clark and Addison. The White Sox continue to get really good starting pitching and find different ways to lose ball games. So where would you like to begin today?
Well, I think the mystery is the deepest on the north side, because the Cubs win 2 out of 3 from the Giants and they begin a series against the Mets with Shota Imanaga, their ace this year, on the mound. And you figure this is the way they begin the path, they begin the trek back to normalcy. On a Friday afternoon at Wrigley Field, a beautiful day, and Shota Imanaga got shelled. 3 innings, 11 hits, 10 earned runs, Bruce. That's not the way back to looking like the team that you think that you are. So we've had all three things happen to the Cubs this week. Their offense has let them down, their bullpen has collapsed, and now the starting pitching was disappointing. So I don't know what the Cubs are, and I don't know if they have to figure it out, because they have the luxury of playing in a National League that has several elite teams, and then they have everybody else in a big pile of muck called mediocrity. So that's what the Cubs are, and that's the most disappointing and maybe the biggest question in town.
Yeah, so I think we differ on that. Your opinion is correct. There's nothing that's not true in everything you said. Except that I don't believe that a good Major League Baseball team is going to compare himself to the rest of the division. I don't think a good organization is going to compare themselves to the rest of the division, or a bad league. A mediocre Major League Baseball season where there's only 10 or 11 teams over 500 out of 30. So I don't think that's a gauge. I think that's a mechanism, David. I think you're right that it's a mechanism to show that you can continue to compete. But I don't think that's getting you to the next level. I don't think that's helping you figure out how much player development should be involved in your season, how much you should go out there and get veterans to help you try to win and get better. How do you piece 2024 together and at the same time build your organization to be what you feel it's going to be? I think right now when you look at the Chicago Cubs, they're kind of stuck. And what I mean by that is you have player development at first base. You have player development at third base. You have player development at catching. Part-time, you have player development in center field. You have some player development in the bullpen. You're dealing with a closer situation that is not easy to detect at this point in time. So are the Cubs stuck in that middle area of, yes, they have some good ball players that are signed for contracts for the next 3 or 4 years, but are the players they are counting on to be a big part of the future not ready to help you win in 2024?
I want to respond to all that, but I want to set up the show first because we have a big one today. 9:30, Jonathan Cannon, the White Sox right-hander, 23 years old, coming off a very strong start. He will join us. At the top of the hour, Rick Sutcliffe. He's in town because this is a a celebration of Ryne Sandberg. The unveiling of Rhino's statue on Sunday at 3 o'clock is going to be an event that you don't want to miss. And certainly if you heard the salute to Sandberg on Friday night with Mark Grody on The Score, you know that this is a special weekend for guys on that 1984 Cub team. Rick Sutcliffe was as important as any. He'll join us at 10 o'clock. Your calls and text, 312-644-6767. Bruce, I do think that you're right. I do think that you assess it correctly. But I also think this, it's an ongoing debate and discussion. And I think the Cubs are waiting for a sign on the field, a sign from this roster to tell them what direction to lean. This isn't about necessarily 2024 and getting in and winning a championship. But if you can back into the playoffs, nobody would complain about that. And this team has enough talent to do just that in this National League. The problem is, as I pointed out in trying to set things up today, they've had disappointments at every level, offensively, bullpen, and now the starting pitching starts to look a little shakier if Shota Imanaga starts to take a step backward and regress somewhat. So I don't know that the Cubs can answer that question here on June 21st, 22nd, 23rd, this weekend. I think they're waiting for a sign, and as we all are.
Well, I'm going to pose something that I haven't heard talked about, and whether or not it's something to really consider. And that is, if we get to the All-Star game, and that's not all that far away right now, and the Cubs continue to be 8 games or so out of first place and trending toward 6, 7, 8 games under 500, should the Cubs be sellers? 312-644-6767. And by that, David, I mean not in the sense of this is a rebuild, but it's a continual build to build around the young players that are coming around, to build around the guys that they have there. Is this something that the Cubs should consider going into the second half if things continue to be treading water?
That's a big if they continue to go in the direction where you don't feel like you can get out of your own way. I think it's a question they're going to have to ask. It came up this week on the Mully and Haw show. Mully asked a really interesting question because I was getting over my skis excited about, hey, Pete Alonso's here. Pete Alonso's going to hit the ball on the Waveland, and he can hit 50 home runs at Wrigley Field. And Pete Alonso was the guy you want to trade for. And Mully asked a good question. Who's more likely to be traded, Pete Alonso or Cody Bellinger at the deadline? Because right, both guys are dealing with the end of a contract, and both teams could justify trying to get a haul for the power hitter, for that guy, because there'd be a lot of interest if both guys or either guy was made available. So it's a point well taken, Bruce. Before we get to the macro, let's focus in a little bit of the micro yesterday, because I want you to weigh in on what you saw from Shota Imanaga, what you expected, and how concerned Cub fans should be. Let's go back to pregame. Let's talk about where Craig Counsell was asked about Shota and his pitch selection and how that may be something that you want to keep an eye on.
Do you want him to make up a pitch? You want him to throw a sinker today? Shota has passed so many tests. I think we should stop. Just to be fair, you know what I mean? Because we can say this for every player, every single day, or every pitcher or whatever. But I think Shota doesn't need to pass any more tests.
Bruce, this was the first time that Shota had faced a team for the second time around. The approach was different. How concerned should the Cubs be about that?
Well, again, I go back to the show that we had the first time that Shota got bombed after being so perfect for, I think, the first 6 or 7. And you and I went up and back about, I said, remember he had 10 days off in between, right? And then he got beat up after 10 days. So your question to me was he rusty? Did he have too much time off? And my answer to you was, and it is again today, they're not going to be perfect no matter how good they are. They're going to have bad outings. I think he had a bad outing yesterday. He couldn't place the ball. All the mistakes, everything that was, his fastball was up. It was getting clobbered. It was a couple miles less per hour. As you pointed out, it's the second time that he faced New York. And the one thing that we talked about when he was signed is Shota's a fly ball pitcher, and he should be fine in April and May. But when June and July and August come around and the ballpark changes, some of those fly balls that are caught in the early part of the year are going to go out of the ballpark. Yesterday, he just got hit hard. He just didn't have any command whatsoever. His velocity was down, and he got beat up. I don't think it's any major reason to think that he's not going to continue to be a really good pitcher. Is he going to be a dominant pitcher? I think that might be the question, David. Is Shota Imanaga going to be a dominant pitcher, or is he just going to be a good pitcher for the Cubs this year and the rest of his career?
I want to also mention the White Sox losers 2-1 in Detroit on Friday night. That was the way they lost, which people will remember more than that they lost. Paul DeJong doubled off first base, forgot how many outs there were, and it happens. We heard Ozzie Guillen talk on NBC Sports Chicago post-game about it happened to him when he was a rookie. Frank Thomas talked about it happening to him as well. It happens to all the players. DeJong owned it post-game, Bruce, like the pro that he is, but it was just frustrating to see the Sox invent another way to lose. They now are one of five teams, I think, to only win 20 games in the first 71 to be on this path historically, and that's not a good sign. More bad news for the White Sox.
Yeah. So, David, here's the thing I want to say. We know DeJong. He's a stand-up guy. He was on our show about 4 weeks ago and said he expects to be traded. He will embrace it because of the fact that the White Sox will get better. He'll have a chance to continue to resuscitate his career that had really gone the other way. And there's no doubt about him being a stand-up guy and a pro. But my question to you, David, is does the excessive losing get to players, even great pros like Paul DeJong, after so much losing goes on? Does that kind of pollute the mind as well as anything else? This is just one incident.
I think they have the answer is yes. They're human. It's got to be tough. Concentration is compromised, and that's not an excuse. It's just a reality. This is the stat that I was going from Codified Baseball. It says that the 2024 Chicago White Sox, in the last 100 years, only five MLB teams have failed to win more than 20 of their first 77 games, and the White Sox are one of those five teams. That's a lot to take, regardless of how much you should. I understand why your focus level would wane at times, not to make excuses for them, but boy, I mean, this is a rough year on the South Side.
Well, they had an even worse game on Thursday than how they lost yesterday, because they had a lead and they flubbed a game away that they had in their pocket, okay, by defensive errors and, you know, lack of execution mentally, physically. That was a bad loss that they let go. Yesterday's game, they were trailing 2-1. So you can argue that even though he was a tying run and there were two outs, that they weren't going to win that game. The reality is that if you look at the Chicago White Sox from the second week on, you and I talked about the fact that the Sox had a chance to be much worse than was planned. Okay, and when you plan not to win, that plan can go haywire, and that's what's happened in 2024 to the White Sox. However, the pitcher development for the Chicago White Sox, I think, is something that White Sox fans can feel really good about, and we're going to have one of those young pitchers in just a few minutes on the show. Jonathan Cannon will be joining us at 9:30. But, David, the double-A pitchers, the way Crochet has pitched, the way Fetty has pitched, it hasn't been starting pitching that hurt the Chicago White Sox.
Let's zero in on Crochet for a moment, because he is the guy who is the most likely to emerge as the ace. He's got dominating stuff, Bruce. He has been very good, better than expected, I think, in the rotation, at the top of the rotation for the White Sox, because of how they're using him has been a little bit of a surprise, because he's made 16 starts already. And this is going to become a bigger issue as we move forward. Number one, whether or not they're willing to trade him. And secondly, how they're going to use him if he stays. You had a conversation. I'll let you set up what you talked about with Garrett Crochet in terms of how he will be used and what the White Sox fans should expect from him moving forward.
Okay, Dave. Well, as you said, he's got 16 starts already. He's already passed not only what he threw last year, which was only 25 innings coming back from Tommy John the year before, but his career amount of innings was 74. He's way past that. Okay. So with that in mind, I talked to Pedro Grifol on Thursday, and I said to him, I said, we know you've told us all along, the organization has told us all along, that they're going to have to monitor the innings for Crochet, but he's been so good, and he's looked so much like an all-star starting pitcher. What will be your plan going forward for limiting his innings?
I don't think anybody has an answer to that, and if they do, I'd like to hear it, and I'd like to hear the reasons, because you don't go from being a reliever and 28 innings or whatever he had last year to 190 innings, because he's on pace for 100, 180, 200 innings. I mean, that's what he's on pace. Every time he takes the ball, it's 6-7 innings. So I don't think there's a blueprint to that. It's an extremely hard question to answer, and I don't have an answer, that's for sure.
Bruce, I think they can have a blueprint, but they've got to have the answer. They've got to have a plan. This their job to have a plan. I would think that maybe they do, and maybe he's not privy to the details, but if you're Brian Bannister, if you're Chris Getz, there's no way you haven't not discussed this. And if you haven't discussed this, that's negligence. They've got to have a plan in place if they keep him, what to do with him once August 1st arrives.
Well, they're not sharing it with us, that's for sure. My question to you, David, is I'm sure they have a plan. They had a plan going in. But because of the not only the dominance, but also looking like a veteran pitcher out there for the first time as a starting pitcher in the major leagues, dominating lineups like he has, not a lot of stressful innings, although he had a couple of them in his last start. Where do you go? I mean, we saw them limit innings for rehabbing pitchers coming back, guys like Chris Sale back in the day where they skip starts for them. But with Crochet, I've learned that this guy already believes that he should be going out there and throwing 7 or 8 innings every start. Here's what he said to me Thursday morning, David. I said, I really like the way that you pitched on Thursday. He said, I didn't have a slider. I had very little. I said, that's what I liked about your game is that you battled. You gave up 3 runs in 6 innings. He said, well, that's no good. Okay. He said, that's no good. He said, I expect to go out there and throw 8 innings and give up 2 runs or less. He said, that's what I think I'm going to do. So you have mentally, this young pitcher has a different mindset than a lot of guys that I've seen. And he believes that he's ready to throw 200 innings this year.
Great. You want him to be the guy that takes that mentality to the mound, and he's menacing and he's intimidating and he's going to throw that fastball. He's going to throw it every single pitch, and you're not going to be able to hit it because that's the mindset you want him in. But you have to be in charge of what's best for your organization if you're Chris Getz, if you're Bannister. You're not. You have to save the manager from making a bad decision, and you have to save the player from himself. Bruce, if they get to August 1st and Garrett Crochet is still on the White Sox, which I think he should be, because if you have any shred of hope, any glimmer that emerges from this season, it will be based on your starting rotation, your young pitching, then Garrett Crochet has got to be at the center of that. And the only way you can feel good about that is if he finishes the season healthy and with the arrow pointing in the right direction. He's got to be on a pitch count. you have to consider shutting him down in September. These are things that nobody wants to hear, but I think in the best interest of the White Sox, for a guy who hasn't pitched 180 or 200 innings, or goodness sakes, not even where every pitch he throws is a new career high. Bruce, don't you agree? You're not playing for anything this year except for futility. You can't send him out there for seven innings on August 17th. For what?
You know, normally I'd say 99% of the time I would agree with that statement, okay? In this case, you got a guy. Are you worried about him right now when he goes out and pitches?
I think they're worried every time he takes the mound.
No, I'm asking you as a fan or observer.
No, I'd love seeing Gerrit Crochet on the mound. I'd love seeing him wipe out lefties.
Does he look like a guy that's under a lot of stress when he's throwing pitches right now?
Nope.
Okay. Do you get the sense that he's in total control of what he's doing out there when he pitches?
So far, so good.
I think he's got the highest WAR
of any pitcher in baseball. I have to check. His WAR, you can make the argument, he's getting as much out of his potential as he possibly could this year.
So many, many guys like Greg Maddux, go back to a great Hall of Famer by the name of Warren Spahn, who won 363 games. These guys told me the only way to keep your arm strong and away from injury is to throw every day. Different type of throwing, not stressful throwing, but keeping your arm moving every single day, okay?
Okay.
All the Braves pitchers who never got hurt, you know, you talk about Smoltz, you talk about Glavin, you talk about Maddux, they had a throwing program every single day, whether it was long toss, whether it was a bullpen. So my comeback to you is Gerrit Crochet an outlier? Okay. Is this something that can be treated differently?
He is exceptional. He could be the exception to the rule, Bruce. And I'm not asking for extremes. I'm not one of these guys who's saying, okay, black or white. There's got to be somewhere in the middle. And in that middle, the gray area might be, all right, we understand you might be the outlier. We understand that you might be, the science says that if you're throwing regularly could be better for your arm long term. All those things. We're not baseball scientists. They better do the research. They better know. I think you have to strike a balance here. Maybe he goes out and he's on a 75-pitch limit in August and a 65-pitch limit in September. I don't know what it is, Bruce, but it's got to be something better than I don't have the answer to that. It's got to be the answer. I have a plan. We're going to execute the plan, and everything's going to be okay.
I hate pitch limits, okay? I think
but it's realistic.
Because nobody can build an arm strength with pitch limit, okay? The only way you build arm strength is by lengthening, okay? I would say if you're going to do anything with Crochet, you'll skip starts rather than limit the amount of innings. Let him be the pitcher who he is. Let him do it, you know, if you have to skip starts toward the end of the year. If you shut him down in September, I think you'd have a really tough argument
Mark
with
Pryor
this guy.
Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood would like a word with you, Bruce.
Yeah, well, those were injuries that that kept coming back, okay? I would take Kerry Wood's career for just about anybody out there.
That's a different segment. Oh, man, did you open that door? That's Pandora's box. Really? Kerry Wood's career?
Is it what you wanted? No.
No.
As a fan. Is it what Kerry wanted as a pitcher? No. But if you look at the totality of the pitcher and what he was able to do as a starter and then as a bullpen guy, that was a pretty good career.
Show me potential. Show me production. Then let's talk about what the gap there. That's another show. That's another series, Bruce. We could do a doc on that. The Kerry Wood career, fulfilling or not? Bruce Levine says yes. I don't know.
I say definitely yes, but not what everybody else planned, not what Kerry planned, not what fans planned. Not what baseball expected, but still a very excellent career.
Bruce, it's a great point. You got us going here. We're going to talk to a young pitcher with a bright future when we come back. Jonathan Cannon from the White Sox will join us. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
3-2. And he got him. Cannon went upstairs with the heat for his second strikeout.
This is a good battle by Duran, and Jonathan, at the end of the day, won it. Some high heat. It's in the zone.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh.
Welcome back, and thank you, NBC Sports Chicago, for that highlight. Jonathan Cannon earlier this month at the strikeout. He's had a lot of those lately, and he had a great outing on Tuesday night. 8 2/3 shutout innings against the Astros' first major league victory. David Haugh, Bruce Levine, it's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And joining us now on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline is Jonathan Cannon. Download the Circus Sports app today. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Congratulations on your first major league victory, 8 2/3 innings. I think that a lot of people watching were pulling for you to have that rarest of things these days, the complete game shutout. How much were you lobbying Pedro Grifol to keep you in the game?
I mean, I obviously wanted to finish it. Giving up those back-to-back hits in the ninth, I mean, the competitor in me wanted to keep going to try and get it, but I understand the decision.
Jonathan, when you look at your success so far in the major leagues, and you know, it's interesting to watch you and watch young pitchers like yourself come up to the major leagues and have a sense of who you are and comfortability. You have looked so comfortable in that role. What is the thought process compared to throwing in the major leagues as opposed to when you're in the minor leagues and pitching there the last 2 or 3 years? And is the composure that we see on the mound really what's going on inside of you while you're out there on the mound?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you first come up from being in the minor leagues, it's sort of in your head, you're like, you're wondering if your stuff plays. You're like, am I going to be able to get these guys out? And then once you go out and kind of you see that you can record outs, you can get swing and miss, you can get strikeouts, it kind of builds that confidence a little bit to then just kind of throw stuff over the plate. Because, I mean, that's really the biggest difference between the major leagues and minor leagues, in my opinion, is these major league hitters are really good at being disciplined in the zone, and you got to beat them in the zone. And so that's kind of been the big thing for me, is trying to throw as many strikes as possible and just trusting my stuff in the zone.
So, Jonathan, since you came back and your last three outings against the Red Sox, against the Mariners, against the Astros, 18 2/3 innings, you've given up one run. It looks like somebody who has made that step, taken a huge leap, and now the breakthrough is starting to happen. What changed, and what is going well for you in the last three outings?
Yeah, I mean, I think number one is refining the pitches a little bit. I thought when I came up, the stuff wasn't as sharp as it could have been, and I thought that it stuck out a lot just when it came to facing the lefties. I mean, I think righties were hitting like 150 against me, and lefties were hitting like north of 500, which isn't sustainable at all. So I knew that I had to refine something to be able to get those lefties out. And it really came down to just a couple minor grip tweaks. I'm not trying to throw another pitch or do anything completely different. It was just kind of making little minor adjustments. And I think that's just the name of the game, is you see what's working, what's not working, and you have to adjust a lot mid-season. And I was able to make that adjustment down in Charlotte and come back up and starting to see some success with it. Now it's just about consistency.
Jonathan Cannon of the White Sox joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David, I'm Bruce. We're here talking baseball 50 to 52 weeks out of the year on The Score. Jonathan, when you look at your composite, and a lot of people just look at pitchers, not necessarily watching them, but look at the metrics on you, the one thing that stands out is you're not walking anybody. So obviously you're coming at hitters. We always watch young pitchers, whether or not when they come up, whether they're walking people or they're having trouble, you know, locating. That seems to be the least of your problems right now. How do we get to that point for you, who, you know, in the minor leagues you were pretty much 2.5 to 3 to 1 strikeouts to walks?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's always been one of my better qualities as a pitcher is the ability to throw strikes. And for me, it's more of just a – I don't want to beat myself on the mound. Like, this game's hard enough as it is, and there's in my head, like, there's just no reason to beat yourself. Like, hitting is very, very difficult, and so I don't want to make their job any easier by – giving them free bases, and then next thing you know, a stolen base, and you haven't even given up a hit yet, and the runner's in scoring position. So now the bleeder through the hole or the flare over first base is now a run. So it's really just trying to attack guys and make them beat me.
So, Jonathan, you grew up in Georgia. You went to University of Georgia. I wonder who your favorite pitcher was growing up, and at what point in your career, at what point in your youth did you think that being a major league pitcher was an attainable goal?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, growing up in Georgia, obviously watched a lot of baseball. Being growing up right next to the Braves, I used to really enjoy watching Craig Kimbrell at the beginning of his career with the Braves coming up as a pitcher. And I mean, I really didn't get into watching the rest of Major League Baseball until I was in high school and college. But I remember growing up going to games and watching Craig Kimbrell come out and throw 100 miles an hour. I used to remember Billy Wagner, the left-hander, used to come in and nail down wins for the Braves. I used to love watching them come in and just throw 100 miles an hour before everyone was throwing 100 miles an hour. But I have a lot of very fond memories watching those guys pitch.
Jonathan, what's the Ethan Katz part of your development? What has that been like? How has that helped you so far from spring training on until your major league career has started right now?
Yeah, Ethan's been awesome. And I think the biggest thing that he's done with me is just kind of, like, be honest with me and shoot me straight about what I need to work on when I had the Tampa Bay outing a couple weeks ago, gave up some runs, gave up a couple homers. And it was the conversation was really just, we got to kind of iron out that changeup a little bit. And so that was the biggest focus when I got sent back down to Charlotte was focusing on that changeup. And then he's so helpful when it comes to preparing for lineups and coming up with a good plan and making adjustments on the fly. Sometimes as a pitcher, it's difficult to see what hitters are trying to do. It's easier for Ethan to kind of see some of the adjustments that the hitters are making and kind of relay that to me so I can make the necessary adjustments, just because you get so locked into being a competitor and trying to get them out. Sometimes you don't really see what the hitters are trying to do to you. So he's been very helpful with pointing some of those things out to me and making those mid-game adjustments.
Jonathan, it was only 2 years ago that you were selected in the third round of the 2022 draft, and here you are looking like a guy who's going to be in the majors for a very long time and looking like you belong. I know in probably your goal chart and in your ambitions, you wanted to be here sooner rather than later, and you want to have as quick of a path through the minors as possible, but has this been accelerated? Has this happened even faster than maybe you would have imagined?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely happened faster than I could have ever imagined. And it's sometimes difficult when you're in the minor leagues, you're in Double A, you're in High A, you're in Triple A, like to kind of see yourself up here. And you get kind of caught up in trying to get the next promotion and get to the next level. And sometimes you can kind of lose focus on your current outing because you got to go out there every 5-6 days in the minor leagues and make starts as well. And if you're kind of caught up trying to get promoted and trying to go up a level every single time, like you lose focus about your current outing because you still got to perform down there as well. So, I mean, I didn't get too caught up in worrying about getting here fast. I knew it would come, and I was just trying to focus on one outing at a time down there.
The baseball world has talked an awful lot about Garrett Crochet and his excellence this year. I've gotten to know him from last year and this year as a guy that has such tremendous belief in himself and such tremendous thought process about where he wants to go. What has your experience been like? Your locker is very close to his. You've gotten to know him a little bit over the last year or two. What has that been like for you? And what do you see in Garrett that you can take and try to emulate about where you want to go with your career?
Yeah, Garrett's awesome. He's an awesome dude, and I've learned a lot from him. And he's only a little bit older than me, so we have become good friends over the last year or so. So I've definitely taken a lot from him. I think the number one thing is just his preparation and his mindset that he goes into in every start. I mean, Garrett was a reliever for his first 2 years, even in college. I was a reliever for some of it, ended as a starter, but obviously had his last year cut short because of COVID. But to see him make this transition into the starting rotation has been so fun to watch, and watch him go out there every 5 days and shove and punch out the world has been very fun to watch. And I think that it has to do with his mindset, really. I mean, he just goes out there and knows that his stuff is better, and he can go out there and just throw it wherever he wants to and get guys to swing and miss wherever.
Before I let you go, Jonathan, I know it's been a tough year for the White Sox as a team. Individually, you're one of the bright spots. Got to ask, you're 23 years old, spending your first summer in Chicago as a professional athlete. What's been the best part?
I think the number one thing has been the food. I've started to create a little notes app on my phone of some good spots. I think my top spot so far that I've been to is Bavette's Steakhouse, and that's been my favorite so far. But I'm always open to recommendations if you guys have any good ones.
Well, I imagine you're going to be here long enough to sample many of the city's best steakhouses, because it looks like you're going to be here a while. So congratulations and best luck moving forward, and we'll work on that list of restaurants for you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Cannon, White Sox right-hander, rookie, got his first major league victory against the Astros on Tuesday night, Bruce. 8 2/3 innings, dominance, and one of the few bright spots in the South Side this year.
There's a lot of bright spots coming pitching-wise, and when you see the White Sox make some more trades coming up here over the next 6 weeks, you're going to see more pitching brought in. The quickest way to get good when you're rebuilding, David, is definitely build your pitching staff, and the White Sox mantra is pitching, pitching, and more pitching.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw. This is Inside the Clubhouse. We're here until 11 o'clock. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Big second hour ahead. Rick Sutcliffe joining us in a few moments. And then we will talk Cubs and celebrate Ryan Sandberg. We'll play back some of the interview he had in the Mullion Haw Show on Friday morning. Bruce, Jonathan Cannon, what a bright young man. What a bright future. Tell me this. Jonathan Cannon, Garrett Crochet, Drew Thorpe, 1-2-3 in the Sox rotation sooner rather than later. That bodes well. That provides a little hope in a dismal season.
I think so. You know, throw in Noah Schultz and a few of the other guys that are on their way. I can't think of a better way to do a rebuild than the White Sox are attempting to do by getting young pitching. Because we know one thing. No matter how good or how great the arms are from some of these guys, some of them are going to get hurt. Some of them are not going to be what you think they're going to be. There's always bumps in the road for any young starting pitchers getting to the major leagues. But with any luck whatsoever, I think the White Sox are going about it the right way. And I don't think it's going to take 4 or 5 years to get better. I think by 2026, if you have enough pitching and you have enough depth in that pitching department, I think the White Sox are back at contending for a Central Division championship. Now, a lot of things are going to have to go right.
Sure.
You're going to have to get position players that are good, that are staying healthy. But I like the way they're going about it.
Add Uriarte to the mix. Kai Bush just got honored. You mentioned Schultz. Nestrini is at Charlotte. I wonder, Bruce, of the guys we have mentioned, who has the highest ceiling in your view?
I don't know if it's cannon or crochet, but you know, if you look at the short careers of both of them as starting pitchers,
it's a great debate. That's the kind of debate you want to have if you're a Sox fan.
I'm not afraid to say either one of those guys. And again, if you're lucky enough that these guys stay healthy and their trek to the staying in the major leagues is more linear, you have something going. But again, lots of things can happen along the way, so we'll just have to watch it. But if you're building a team from the future, and I call this the White Sox, if you remember, after the first month of the season, pretty much an expansion team, mm-hmm. I think this is the way to go.
One guy who knows a lot about pitching is our next guest, Rick Sutcliffe. He's in town for the unveiling of the Ryan Sandberg statue on Sunday, and he will join us next on Inside the Clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Big second hour ahead. Rick Sutcliffe joining us in a few moments, and then we will talk Cubs and celebrate Ryan Sandberg. We'll play back some of the interview he had in the Mullion Haw Show on Friday morning. Bruce, Jonathan Cannon, what a bright young man. What a bright future. Tell me this. Jonathan Cannon, Garrett Crochet, Drew Thorpe, 1-2-3 in the Sox rotation sooner rather than later. That bodes well. That provides a little hope in a dismal season.
I think so. You know, throwing Noah Schultz and a few of the other guys that are on their way. I can't think of a better way to do a rebuild than the White Sox are attempting to do by getting young pitching. Because we know one thing. No matter how good or how great the arms are from some of these guys, some of them are going to get hurt. Some of them are not going to be what you think they're going to be. There's always bumps in the road for any young starting pitchers getting to the major leagues. But with any luck whatsoever, I think the White Sox are going about it the right way. And I don't think it's going to take 4 or 5 years to get better. I think by 2026, if you have enough pitching and you have enough depth in that pitching department, I think the White Sox are back at contending for a Central Division championship. Now, a lot of things are going to have to go right.
Sure.
You're going to have to get position players that are good, that are staying healthy. But I like the way they're going about it.
Add Uriarte to the mix. Kai Bush just got honored. You mentioned Schultz. Nestrini is at Charlotte. I wonder, Bruce, of the guys we have mentioned, who has the highest ceiling in your view?
I don't know if it's Cannon or Crochet, but if you look at the short careers of both of them as starting pitchers,
it's a great debate. That's the kind of debate you want to have if you're a Sox fan.
I'm not afraid to say either one of those guys. And again, if you're lucky enough that these guys stay healthy and their trek to the staying in the major leagues is more linear, you have something going. But again, lots of things can happen along the way, so we'll just have to watch it. But if you're building a team from the future, and I call this the White Sox, if you remember, after the first month of the season, pretty much an expansion team, mm-hmm. I think this is the way to go.
One guy who knows a lot about pitching is our next guest, Rick Sutcliffe. He's in town for the unveiling of the Ryan Sandberg statue on Sunday, and he will join us next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.